We have given you two documents. The one document talks to what are called chilling revelations from the documentary that we are going to be discussing. The other document is a call for nominations for national orders. I will talk to these documents in the process of making my opening remarks to this media briefing. As you know, the documentary we are talking about was produced by one Pascale Lamche. It seeks to memorialize the legacy of the late comrade Winnie Nomzamo Madikizela Mandela. As you can well imagine, I had to field many questions from many people in South African society and beyond, who wanted me to explain things arising out of the documentary. If you look at the five chilling revelations from the documentary, the document which talks to this, they are numbered, they are listed and numbered, these revelations. The relevant revelation for our discussion this morning is revelation number 5. You may be wondering why I kept quiet, or we kept quiet, for this long. I know that Commissioner Fivers, who is my co-accused in this matter, did an interview at the request of ENCA, responding to some of these revelations. I chose to observe the period of mourning for Comrade Nomzamo, because I thought it will be wrong for me to be tempted to stampede her legacy, which, by the way, is our shared legacy. I believe that the producer of this documentary is an award-winning producer. And I know she's here. I wonder whether the people who give these awards regard issues of ethics as being of any materiality. I raise this question because, as I say, the document I gave you talks about five chilling revelations. You make five chilling revelations about people who are still alive. They are very much available. You don't think they have a right to ensure that they put forward a version which may corroborate what the other people are saying, or which may need to be compared and contrasted to what the other people are saying, which would have been a fair thing, I think, to do. This is a right I will promote and defend, even if the victim is not myself. I must also say that I received a call from Mrs. Gloria Sirobe of Whiphold. It is one of the corporate entities that contributed to the buying of this documentary so that they get the rights for it to be shown by ENCA. She wanted to know if I had any objection or any problems with it being shown, because she was told that it raises some controversial issue about me. And I said, I have absolutely no right to censor a documentary. I know that even though I was denied the right, or perhaps I was presumed deaf, because you know there's a lot of misinformation in the public domain, I was denied the right to participate. There are other ways by which I will be able to communicate with the South African public and the world, because I've been doing that in any case without the availability of this facility, the documentary. Now, the chilling finding. The ANC asked apartheid police to reopen investigations on Winnie about the Stompy murder. You can see I'm saying Winnie because I'm just reading directly what was said. In 1995, Minister of Safety and Security, and that was myself at the time, said that a team of police officers, including Hank Heslinger, the dramatis persona in the documentary, must be established to reopen this investigation, find evidence linking her, Mrs. Mandela, to the assassination and murder of Stompy. And the minister promised, well, maybe I should say, this is what is being said in the document I gave you in 1995. I don't know what that document was quoting, because Hank Heslinger in the documentary, using the mouth which is his and not another person's mouth, says 1994. But anyway, this document says 1995. And in the process of talking to the team, which Heslinger was part of, the minister said, I am a member of the National Executive Committee of the ANC, and then promised the team unlimited access to budgetary resources, which will even enable them to travel the world. Now, Heslinger is not, even at the time of being interviewed, is not a constable who had just graduated from a basic police training. A senior police officer who should know best that as far as operational issues are concerned, deciding on whether to open or close investigations, that is the province of the national commissioner. It's not the responsibility of the minister. I know what he was describing. He's describing things that I heard about how policing used to be done before 1994. He was not describing what we did. We ran ethical governance in the Ministry of Safety and Security and in the Department of Safety and Security. He knows Heslinger fully well that the accounting officer of that department, which he belonged to, is the Commissioner of Police. there was no slush fund. Maybe he still had a propensity for slush funds. We did not have them during my time in that office. He must also credit me with some decent level of IQ. Why would I say to a police officer, I'm a member of the NEC, of the ANC? What does that have to do with my relationship with him? I'm a member of the NEC, of the ANC. I did not have time for irrelevancies. I really did not have that. I don't know what sensation he wanted to produce, even as he talked about that. I think he is a very dismal estimation of my intelligence to even suggest that I said that. But I will still say a few things about Hessling as we proceed in our briefing. Now, I went into that ministry having been deployed by the ANC, appointed by President Nelson Mandela. I knew that our primary responsibility was to transform the police force into a police service that was going to be an instrument for dealing with the challenges of crime in the country. And I knew that it was a police force because it was positioned to do things that were chilling. I think the most chilling things that you could ever come across are things that the police used to do before 1994. They had a counter-insurgency campaign that went by the name of Stratcom, which was premised on the drive to create a climate of opinion which would foment divisions within the liberation movement. That was primarily the responsibility of specific units within the security establishment and the special branch of the SAP and the special branches of the former Bantustan police forces played that role. They wanted to reverse the tide then of the anti-apartheid struggle. We knew that we had a responsibility to demilitarize the police and take the police out of politics, because politics is not their business. You will see in that documentary that there is one Paul Erasmus, also a police, a member of the police force, then, who was talking apparently authoritatively about Stratcom operations. And he was talking about what he knows. And he does talk about the existence of radicals and non-radicals in the ANC. Now you will understand why we wanted to take them out of politics, because they did not even know politics. He talks about a division that did not exist in the ANC, because people joined the ANC on the realization that there was something radically wrong in South African society, and you needed a radical solution to the problems which drove these people into the ANC. So you couldn't be a member of the ANC and not be radical. This false division was created by Stratcom in order to create conditions for the liberation movement and generally society to be divided so that we could fight amongst ourselves and in the process get weakened. But he talks about that. I must tell you that we knew that this Stratcom business, counter-insurgency campaign, was not just a peculiarity of the special branch in South Africa. This is what some of their soulmates did in places like Latin America, the military dictatorships there, in the former British colonies, in places like Haiti and so on. So they did that because they wanted to preserve the system of apartheid, which was fundamentally undemocratic. So we faced the responsibility to reorientate these police officers and focus them on the task of fighting crime. And you can see, when you listen to Erasmus, that he had still planted himself on the wrong side of this national agenda. Because that's all he was trained for many years to do. That's all he knew, that he must be looking for ways to divide the people. Now, I think I must share this with the public through you. It was a very difficult task we faced when we got into government. And I'll illustrate this, because by virtue of where I was sitting in that dispensation, I received delegations of people who were operatives in these Stratcom operations, especially the ones who were peeling away from Flag Plus, which was the seat, one of the seats of Stratcom. Listened to chilling stories, which should not be made into a toy. So even when some senior officers in the police were mobilizing against the Truth Commission, I understood what they feared. Because some of the things they did are things that they would not even want their own loved ones to know, that they are capable of such horrendous, of doing such horrendous things. So when General van der Merwe, for instance, the former commissioner of the SAP, was really leading the mobilization against people going to the Truth Commission from the SAP's ass and so on, I understood what he feared, because I had these insights that were being brought to us, which I was sharing with the leadership of my organization and government, because my organization was leading the government at the time. So we were mobilizing the police and other people coming from the non-statutory bodies, in our case, especially people from MK, to cooperate with the TRC for reasons which must be obvious. These ones feared the TRC. You know that the leadership of the ANC went to the Truth Commission. It's the leadership that was in government at the same time, went to the Truth Commission and made a collective submission to the TRC, in which we owned up to the armed actions that were carried out by members of the ANC. We explained the policy context in which those armed actions were being undertaken. We also explained the context in which members on the ground carried out actions that were in conflict with police. Instances, for instance, where civilians died. I don't go into detail about that, but we can talk about it if you so wish. I'm saying we went into detail about that. And then we said, when subsequent to this, individual leaders and members of the ANC come to make their own presentations about specific issues, specific to them, please, you must look at their submissions in the context of our presentation. You will have seen that indeed individual leaders and members went to the Truth Commission. I will give you two examples. Comrade Nomzamo Winnie Mandela went to the Truth Commission. She had a conviction of kidnapping. You needed amnesty for that. I went to the Truth Commission. I also had a conviction of kidnapping, kidnapped a policeman before 1994. Before 1994, kidnapped a policeman. I needed amnesty. Comrade Winnie and myself are not the only two leaders who went to the Truth Commission. There are others who did. Coming back to what I was saying about Paul Erasmus, the Stratcom people, including him, understood the relationship between the UDF, COSATU, and the ANC. And they understood the problems which these organizations were giving them. The intensification of the struggle in the country, their own unity at the time, because it's important to paint this context. Their own unity at the time was beginning to crack up in different directions. Intellectuals from Stellenbosch who used to rationalize apartheid were beginning to want to see the ANC. Captains of industry were also beginning to go out to Lusaka to see the ANC, which means Stratcom was losing the war. I want you to understand what they did in desperation. One of the things that they did, they killed children and women, I think 11 or 12, at a place called Kwamakuta in present-day KwaZulu-Natal. This is something that is on record. Why did they do that? Because Oliver Tambo was going to meet George Shultz in Washington. And they said, we can't lose our friend, the Americans, because this chap will convince them that he's a nice guy, his organization just has a just cause. So let's kill these children. And Craig Williamson, who was part of these Stratcom operations, actually says that we intensified our communication campaign internationally, particularly in 1987, as Oliver Tambo was touring around the world, because they were becoming desperate. So the killing of civilians on their part was not done just by people on the ground who were agitated by this or that. It was a political act. Now you are listening to this Stratcom operatives in that documentary, and you gain an impression that they cared about black lives, civilian lives. That's the impression you could easily get, unless you have sufficient strategic literacy to see through these nuances, these hidden nuances. In 1981, a lawyer who was a member of the ANC served a number of years on Robben Island, Griffith Mxenge, is killed in Durban. General van der Merwe, who when I came in was commissioner of police, the one who was leading the mobilization against the TRC, issues a statement then and said, Griffith Mxenge was given money by the ANC to pay for the defense of its members. People use this funny word. He ate the money. And the ANC is angry with him. Now, you only get to know years later when some people from FLAG Plus deserted and went to Lusaka. And they say, we killed Griffith Mxenge. But that statement was put out in order to create commotion in the ANC. Because Griffith Mxenge was a very popular member of the ANC. So we must be divided and fight amongst ourselves if we buy the van der Merwe narrative. Why does this documentary feel that it is enough to have Macpherson, Erasmus, and Heslinger telling the people of South Africa the story of the life and times of Winnie Madikizela Mandela? And my perspective against whom they make this chilling revelation, it's not material to the issue. Now, I must also say this. Whether it happened deliberately or inadvertently, the story, in the way it is told, it assimilates Comrade Winnie's positive legacy on balance. Positive legacy on balance. It assimilates that legacy into the Stratcom narrative. You might as well just ask the chief of Stratcom operations to write a biography of Winnie Mandela, if you want to approach it this way, that the views of her own comrades must be subservient to the views of Stratcom. An award-winning now, I need to say this because if I don't say it, although that was not my principal aim, I was dealing with the chilling allegations. There was a time when in the mass democratic movement, we got worried about things that were happening around Comrade Winnie, we had every right to be worried. Things that were being done in the by the Mandela United Football Club in the name of Comrade Winnie, and by extension in the name of the liberation movement, which Nelson Mandela and Winnie, Comrade Winnie, were some of which they were some of the leaders. I'm saying the mass democratic movement, and if people did not know this, of course we didn't admit this to the police. The UDF, which was a coalition of more than 400 organizations, COSATU and so on, were led by people, many people who were leaders in the ANC or members of the ANC. So that forming those organizations was actually part of an ANC task. We were worried. And we counseled Comrade Winnie against keeping that outfit called the Mandela Football Club. She had her own views about the club. Our own political antenna said there must be people in that outfit who are agent provocateurs. We did not have evidence. So out of frustration, having made many, many attempts, we said, no, we can't take responsibility for this thing that we are saying. It must go, Comrade Winnie, it's of a different view. The decision to distance the mass democratic movement from her came from there. Now you see in those old images, Comrade Murphy Murube sitting there, making the announcement. He was flanked by Archie Gumede, the president of the UDF, a long-standing member, a member of long-standing of the ANC, whose father was once president of the ANC in 1927, Josiah Gumede. On the other flank, you had Elijah Bakai, a member of the ANC Youth League, who joined it before the ANC was banned. Murphy Murube went to Robben Island as a student leader and so on. But before he got his main sentence, he was sentenced, I think, 6 months to 6 months or so for refusing to testify against Joe Gabi and other comrades. These were ANC comrades. Joe Gabi was subsequently assassinated in Zimbabwe, where he was chief representative of the ANC, by these characters that are giving an authoritative ode on Comrade Winnie in the documentary. Now, I'm saying by association, of course, because they were part of that milieu. I'm not saying they did it individually. They were part of that milieu. Now, there should be no confusion as to what was the MDM, what was the ANC. So we meet with the leadership in Lusaka. Incidentally, it was Murphy and myself, Comrade Murphy, who met with the leadership in Lusaka. And we're discussing this thing. And I need to disabuse people of this notion that there were instructions, orders, and so on. That was the internal leadership of the ANC sitting down with the externally based leadership of the ANC, exchanging views. Okay, comrades, you say you are distancing yourself, the MDM, from Comrade Winnie. Don't you think that you are denying yourselves the possibility to allow her to benefit from the collective insights that come from the rest of you? What must be her point of reference from now on? Are you not underestimating the weight in these problems? The weight of the role of the other side. Now, there are people who say, well, who are they? The ones who were outside. They actually even think that they were responsible for our decision to distance the MDM. Why did they take this decision from that distance where they were just analyzing and reading books and so on? We took that decision, and they said, no, we are going to make a public statement persuading you to be patient with Comrade Winnie. You must find a way of getting her to continue to work with you. But they had the benefit of things that they could, only they could have the benefit of. Because Dirk Coetzee and the others, when they broke away from Flag Plus, they couldn't come to Midlands where I lived and say, hide me, and then I debriefed them. They had to go to Lusaka. So they understood these things that later come as confessions at the Truth Commission. That there are too many people in the football club who are serving other interests. They understood that. It's not something that we needed then to come and talk about from FNB Stadium. I'm saying they had the benefit of this. Hence, they came at this discussion differently. The relationship between the leadership outside and the leadership in the MDM was such that as the struggle was intensifying, the quality of the decisions they took outside improved because of their interaction with us, but also the quality of our own decisions improved for the same reason. That's how we worked. Now, I'm going to tell you a secret, which must remain a secret between us. The comrades had said, reach out, continue to reach out to Comrade Winnie. I get a call the night before we had to go to FNB Stadium to receive Comrade Sisulu, Walter Sisulu, and the other comrades who had just been released from prison. I get a call from Europe, where our president then, Oliver Tambo, was hospitalized. The call is made by Anthony Mungalu, Comrade Anthony Mungalu. Some of you may know him because we are no longer underground. Even then, you must have known him because underground does not mean hibernation. So he calls me and he says, in the middle of the night, Comrade Sydney, how good are your shorthand skills? I said, none. He said, then we are going to spend a long time on this phone. I'm going to dictate Comrade Oliver Tambo's speech, which must be delivered tomorrow. Now, he can say must, because that was my president speaking on behalf of him, which must be delivered tomorrow. You write it up as I dictate it. So I write up this thing. And then I must then find a typewriter. I don't have one. It's something that I can only do now by working with a reliable comrade, a comrade you treasure. So I drive to Comrade Winnie's house. I wade through the people who are sitting there, the football club and so on, and I get to her. She wakes up. OR wants us to do this. She gives me the typewriter. I say, I can't type. You type. She says, I can't type. So we phone Obri Mokoena. People will know Obri Mokoena. I phone Obri Mokoena, he comes with his wife, Mali Mokoena, and Mali types OR speech. Now, what people know is the MDM distanced itself from Comrade Winnie. We are working to get over that. I'm telling you about one of the things that happened, of which I had first-hand experience. I gave you a document there, which is a nomination form for national awards. You will see that, you will remember that Comrade Winnie got the Order of Luthuli in silver in Freedom Day last year. You will see that she is one of those 22 people who were nominated for that. They were nominated by me. You can see that. You see the... At least 10 of the people who appear on that list, or let me say, all of those comrades were with Comrade Winnie in 1967 when they set up an underground machinery for which they got arrested, and then they were charged in 1969. It's a long trial. That is the generation that brought up some of us. Some of the people who appear on that list are the ones who recruited us into the underground structures of the ANC. Otherwise, we would have been playing dice in the streets, in the townships. They risked to identify people, young people, and bring them into the movement. You will see the type of motivation that is there. You don't destroy someone and then nominate them for a national award. It's an absurdity to even suggest that. So I'm saying Comrade Winnie's legacy is not a matter of conjecture. The sort of conjectures you see in the documentary, perhaps the leadership of the ANC instructed, gave Nelson Mandela an ultimatum to divorce his wife, our place. If the ANC were to say to me, divorce your wife, I'll tell them this is a private matter in relation to the ANC. It means you don't know your ANC if you give me that order. The ANC does not discuss those things. It doesn't discuss those things. But if you got someone not from Stratcom, the people who you are making chilling findings, against whom you are making chilling findings, to explain the ANC on its own terms, I think that would have been a good thing to do. That would have been the best way to use Winnie's life and times as a prism to memorialize her legacy, which is indivisible from the legacy of the ANC. The ANC will never claim that all it did were just a chronicle of interventions, unerring interventions. We have a legacy that will have its negatives, that will have its positives. It's our legacy. We will never disown a single element of Comrade Winnie's legacy. We will explain what needs to be explained in context. These people know what they did to create conditions for things to be done in the name of Mandela, in the name of Comrade Winnie, in order to tarnish the image of the liberation movement. Then, It's either Comrade Winnie is intrinsically evil, or she belongs to a movement that is intrinsically evil, of people who are just prone to fighting each other. Yesterday, I received a call from Julius Malema, the commander-in-chief of the EFF. And he gave me very welcome advice, which I must acknowledge publicly. I really welcome it. He says to me, my leader, and I say my CIC, because I believe that's his title, I believe you are going to a media briefing. That was after this notice was issued. Please handle this briefing in a way that helps us to stop fighting over this issue. So I say, well, Julius, you are giving this advice to somebody who is receptive to this. Because I don't even know why, in the first place, people were fighting over this matter. Because I've heard people say, why is Five Us only saying this for the now, after Comrade Winnie has passed on, that she was found to be innocent after an investigation, which he does say he opened the investigation at the request of Tony Leon, the leader then of the Democratic Party, which later became the DA. So they say, why is he only talking now? But Five Us said in the interview, I went to the Truth Commission and said this to the Truth Commission in 1997. Why is it difficult to understand that he has said this? Where are our listening skills? He said this in 1997. And he also said he opened this thing at the request of Tony Leon. I don't know if Tony Leon has whispered a denial, but I know that he has not denied that. He can't deny that because he went to Vartes asking Five Us to open the investigation. But then there are others whose concern is of a different kind. They say, but why did Comrade Sydney Man allow the apartheid police to investigate Mama? So there must be a law for the ANC and a law for non-ANC. You can't, in all seriousness, be asking that there are people who must not be investigated. Sydney Mufamadi, when he was Minister of Safety and Security, if somebody went to the commissioner and made allegations, the commissioner would be dismissed for not having investigated those allegations. He would be dismissed for not having carried out that investigation. So I say to Julius, but you know, maybe we are blaming you wrongly. Those of you who think that this matter is a matter for football, you fight and so on about it. My generation and the generation before me, we are not discharging the responsibility to this younger, public-spirited people across the board, whether it's EFF, DA, ANC, PAC, at least to share vital information and knowledge with you, because that will also help. And I say to Julius, of course, Julius is younger than my firstborn, and he can't have a lived experience of the things we are talking about, the Truth Commission and so on. So his imagination must be helped by through provision of information. So I say to him, we need to share this information with you, comrades, so that you can have a better understanding of the subtleties of what the other side is doing, especially those who begrudge the new dispensation. Because I know We defeated their machinations. That's why 1994 happened. They must be surprised that they seem to be succeeding now. We are fighting amongst ourselves because we are believing this thing. So it's through no fault of your own, we made an agreement with Julius that I will mobilize people of my generation and older so that we continue to engage on these things, share information, because even us too, as I say, we had the benefit of being brought up by Comrade Winnie's generation. They shared information with us. At the age of 23, these comrades made me a general secretary, the youngest general secretary at the time of a trade union. And we knew then, because of what they told us, abandon this notion that you have a right of the the right to the innocence of childhood, because you are taking big responsibilities. You could set the country on fire, and with it, the ANC and many other important gains that were made in 1994 could perish fighting over nothing. Fighting over nothing, because Winnie, it's our own. We know her. We know her place in our movement, her place in the country. If there are people who are more authoritative about who Winnie is, it's us. So I'm saying, Comrade Winnie's generation taught us politics. They taught us, they gave us listening skills. That's why we don't get we don't miss out the important message that people convey to us. Like, I went to the Truth Commission, that's five of us, in 1997, and told the Truth Commission that there was no evidence linking Winnie to the murder of Stompie. Now, Hank Heslinger, when George Fivers went to the Truth Commission and he said, I appointed a team of three detectives to investigate this, he named them. One of the three was Hank Heslinger. And the Truth Commissioner said, why did you appoint Hank Heslinger? Because there are controversies around this person. I'm talking about the Truth Commissioners, not me. And five of us said, no, I appointed him knowing about these controversies. The thing is, he was in the Soweto murder and robbery squad when these things happened. He was in the investigation team then, but I appointed him with two other investigators who are seasoned investigators. I know they can't be bamboozled by anyone, but I needed to have in the team someone who will recognize the landmarks. This is research work. They recognize the landmarks and be able to ensure that you don't just go all over the show, because I had just opened a narrow element of the investigation, which is whether Mrs. Mandela is linked by evidence to the murder and assault of Stompie. And the Truth Commission accepted that explanation. Now, what are these controversies? Again, you will recall that in the run-up to 1994, when we were negotiating in the context of CODESA, even before CODESA, The single biggest obstacle to the transition that we faced was politically motivated violence. We needed to find ways of stopping that violence so that all of us can have greater confidence in the negotiation process, but also to save lives. So a judge was identified who was different from the many judges that you had during apartheid, who had a sensitivity to human rights. Judge Goldstone was then asked to head up a commission to investigate what is really behind this violence. So Judge Goldstone, in the same way as he was handpicked, he handpicked detectives from the police that were known to have done their work without fear or favor, that had solved cases like the Kwame Kuta case that I was talking about, that had solved cases which were part of the Stratcom spawned atrocities. Hank Heslinger was seconded to the Goldstone Commission unsolicited by the police. Of course, they accepted him, but some credibility issues arose as a result of which the commission said, well, you gave us this man unsolicited. Thank you very much. You can have him back. You can talk to Goldstone. He's still alive. I'm sure, because I want to accept the bona fides of the producer of the documentary, I'm sure they did not know this part, because they would have known that maybe five of us would have given them a more reliable account than to anchor a chilling finding on a person whose place in history is the one that I've just outlined. And as I say, because it's not information we thought could be shared in the way I'm now being forced to share it, except that if people were watchful, they would have said, what are the truth commissioners saying? You know what I mean? What are the truth commissioners saying about Hank Heslinger? So I still maintain that those of us who fought for the liberation of this country alongside Comrade Winnie are the authorities on what happened and why it happened. We could have helped, the cause of truth. We could have served the cause of truth, not by suppressing the others. Give them the right to lie, if that is the right they want to enjoy. But we could have helped by also putting a perspective that is intended to ensure that people know the truth, because it is this truth which will safeguard the gains that were made by our people in the long struggle that they were waging. Because, you know, these generations I'm talking about, they are going. Please feed them the truth, because if you don't feed, I'm talking about the younger generation, feed them the truth, because if you don't feed them the truth, they will destroy their own country. They will tear each other apart. Why should we do Stratcom's job? Thank you.